And welcome to another edition of No Lights Paranormal, where three nerdy paranormal investigators sit down and discuss spooky stories from the web. My name is Joe, I'm the lead investigator.
My name is Teresa, and I am researcher.
My name is Alex, and I am going to shorten my intro tonight to the Baba Yaga enthusiast slash the Celtic druid type person of the group and the equipment center upper.
Fey deal maker.
All right. Joe jumping right. In the weeds.
Yeah, I better delete. No, but welcome to another edition of this podcast. We apologize. I want to go ahead and make this a statement now. We listened to last week's podcast about Emu Lake in the roundtable, and we apologize for it not being uploaded correctly. We're trying to figure out now what's going on. So we apologize for anybody who listened to it, and we're sorry.
It will be ripped down and replaced, yes. And we will try to get the audio up correctly so that it's not super wonky.
Right, yeah.
Yes. So very sorry about that. I think it had something to do with like the way that we ripped the audio from the interview and all kinds of crazy stuff. But anyway, yeah, sorry. We know that it was literally unlistenable, so yeah. We will get that back up for you proper.
Which really sucks because we had a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, yeah. But c'est la vie. Time moves on, and so must we.
Facts.
So any announcements for this week?
So the only announcements that we have right this moment is that we are planning on it. We've been invited and do plan to attend the annual open house for the Lodi Harrisville Masonic Lodge. That is coming up. Oh, God, I can't even remember now. What was it? April 5th? April 6th, April 13th.
It was right before we go to Waverly.
It was. It's coming up. Anyway, I'll
busy
let you know.
Month, that first half of the month. Between, you know, the Mason Lodge plus the weird solar eclipse is supposed to come right through the area.
Yep.
Plus Waverly all at the same time.
Plus my birthday.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the Waverly trip, right? It's for Joe's birthday. So.
Oh, yeah. But I mean,
yeah, we're going to have a very busy beginning to the summer, and I'm okay. I'm excited about it. But yeah, that is the absolute only thing we got going on right now. So if that is something that you are interested in, the reason why we are doing it is not just because we were invited and they are our friends, but also because it's haunted. It's a beautiful old building with a ton of history, and I am very much looking forward to getting back in there. So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Should be a good time. Mm-hmm. You guys need to show up for it. Do we have an address?
So if this is something that you're wanting to do, it is an open house, like I said. But what that means is that they are actually taking candidates,
applications for membership.
Candidates, yes. for membership, exactly. So if you are a male and you would like to join the Freemasons, this is definitely the event where you can go and learn more about it. Of course, take the wife, take the kids, have some fun. There's going to be some food. There's going to be a little tour. We're going to talk about some ghosts and things like that. But the major point here is unity and brotherhood among the members. And women, there is a Mason branch for us as well, but this particular one is for the men.
Mm-hmm. I also would like to make a mild announcement now that my son is kind of standing in the doorway. Despite the fact that I personally may or may not have messed up in making a deal with a fae, our roundtable topic was Indigo Lake. I do want everybody that listens to realize that we will have an unbiased opinion.
Yes.
Come on this here shortly. So what we are going to do is for the part two roundtable for Indigo Lake. By then, Ezra will have gone with us to Indigo Lake. And I think that what I'm going to do is have my son on the podcast and talk about his experiences at Indigo Lake.
I have to say, I didn't see nothing. My dad is crazy.
I wouldn't put that past him.
Wanted to go ahead and just let you guys know that the Freemasons is in fact a nonprofit organization, and the particular one that we're going to be at is located at 105 Harris Street in Lodi, Ohio. That's Lodi. So if that is something that you know you're close to and you want to come, that would be phenomenal. I think that's all.
Yeah.
I think that's all.
Alrighty then. So, short announcements this week. Who went first last week? I can't remember. Or the week before last.
That was a long time ago, bro.
I know, right?
All right. Well, if you want, I will start it off, because I think you went first last time, and I went second, and Alex went third.
That sounds correct.
So, I'll start us off this week. So, we discussed it last week. We are discussing Massachusetts this week.
Massachusetts.
I myself have been there a couple times with my dad on the road. Lovely country. I've had some relatives also live up there, not for very long, but they did live up there. Gorgeous place, nice place, love it. Not a fan of the sports teams, but that's sports, so that's unrelated. But I had a lot of fun researching this. There's a lot of interesting things up there, a lot of old things up there. So yeah, I had a good time. But the article that I chose was about the Bridgewater Triangle. Have you guys ever heard it?
I absolutely have heard of it.
Okay.
Tell me the story.
I picked one that you guys already know, and you're probably going to cut me off a lot.
No, I won't, I promise.
So, I'm just joking. So, alright, the Bridgewater Triangle area. It's an inland Bridgewater Triangle. It's likely one of the most world's haunted, concentrated areas of diverse paranormal reports. Located just 30 miles south of Boston, this 200 mile square area has Massachusetts towns of Abington, Freetown, and Rehoboth, at its angles. The town of Bridgewater is located nearly dead center within the triangle, and the area also encompasses six other Massachusetts towns. I'm not going to say the towns because I will butcher them.
They do have some pretty interesting names.
You really do, and unless I got that, Massachusetts accent, I'm not hitting it. So, some of the mysterious landmarks in there is the Hockamock Swamp.
Oh, you mean the place that I'm doing mine on?
Oh, so you're doing that on, all right.
Love.
Skipping that part. All right. There's also the, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the Dighton Rock. So on the banks of one of the river, the rock lies across from the grassy island burial grounds of the Hockamock Swamp. So you might mention this in your story. Numerous inscriptions of unknown origins are carved into the face of the rock, although various speculations attribute them to Native Americans, Vikings, and even Phoenicians. Their identity has never been specifically determined. So it's just kind of weird writing on there. They can't determine where it came from. And there's a bunch of rocks there with different writings and all that also. Some of the phenomena on there, which was actually discovered by a paranormal researcher, Lauren Coleman, who actually named it in 1970. Saw some things up there of paranormal origin. Aside from the numerous and diverse paranormal reports, what is phenomenal about the Bridgewater Triangle is that the first report of paranormal activity was made over three centuries ago in 1760.
That's some shit. Mm-hmm.
So that's a really long time ago. At 10 a.m. on May 10th, 1760, a sphere of fire was reported to hover over New England, and it made a light so bright that it cast shadows in the morning sun. Reportedly, the light has been seen from both Bridgewater to Roxbury. Since then, the area has spawned a diversity of reports that included paranormal events that range from ghost dancers to UFOs to cryptozoologic sightings. It's a word I don't get to say every day, and I kind of liked it rolling off my tongue.
Yeah, rolled right off the tongue there, Joe.
So the whole gamut of things. Now, the UFO kind of struck my fancy because I necessarily don't believe in aliens. Mm-hmm. So whenever I hear UFO, I'm like, whatever, but I'll read it anyways. But in 1760, which is not a time that you would actually get UFO reports.
Yeah, not really.
And you got that weird smirk on it. Is this covered in your story? Because normally you tell me what story you're doing so we don't overlap.
Today we did kind of AWOL it a little bit.
Yeah. So, in other words, in 1760, a report was most likely first documented UFO report on the planet. However, it certainly wasn't the last UFO report to come out of Bridgewater Triangle. Halloween 1908 marked another UFO sighting documented in a local newspaper. In 1968, five people claimed that they saw a strange ball of light floating among the trees in a wooded past wooded area past Rehoboth. I'll say it like that. Like I said, I butcher this.
There's a lot of words in there.
Right, yeah. You got some weird namings. In 1970, UFO sightings were frequently reported to occur in different areas of the Bridgewater Triangle. In one 1976 report, two UFOs were seen landing on the route along Route 44 near Taunton. So, two UFOs landing. I know government does some weird stuff with planes, and they do some stuff like that. Not wanting to get into conspiracy theories.
But in 1906?
This was in 1970.
Oh, okay, because the first one I thought you said was 1906.
That was the first ever reported.
See, that's we didn't have flying shit in 1906.
Yeah, and another one's in 1908.
See, yeah. That's some shit.
So it's just weird timing of those events, because you didn't really hear of a lot of flying saucers or UFOs. But again, UFO just means unidentified flying object, so it could have been a frisbee going through the air, and they didn't know what the hell a frisbee was.
Right.
In 1994, the Bridgewater law enforcement officer reported seeing a triangular-shaped craft with red and white lights, which, if you remember, maybe four podcasts ago, I actually talked about one seeing it over my house that looked exactly the same.
That's interesting.
It was a triangle shape with a sphere going along the back with red and white lights. So I've seen that stuff. I specifically do not believe in UFOs. I don't believe in aliens.
Do you remember what I... So, I found the video when we were standing in your front yard, and we were all fuck, what is that?
Yeah,
and
that was just weird looking.
Elon Musk's satellites flying through the air.
Shout out to Elon. You gave us some excitement that night.
Yeah. I had like 10 pure seconds of joy.
Yeah.
Also, hook me up with your internet, Ela.
Right. I need that. Also, in the town of Rainham, frequently receive reports of glowing balls of lights floating over the ground at a local dog track. Yeah.
At a dog track.
Well, I attribute that to some people hanging around.
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta make the right bets and make the right deals with the right fay.
Interesting enough.
Kind of wanting to get away if you made the wrong bet. They're like, look at that in the sky, and then take off. The way
pay no mind to the fact that I just lost a fortune.
So yeah. Well,
look at that. If you want me to figure that out, then send my son in the same direction. It's fine.
Right. In 1970, there also was reports of mysterious creatures within that. There was multiple reports of a Bigfoot, a 7-foot-tall hairy monster, and its footprints instigated both Bridgewater and Massachusetts State Police canine unit to conduct a search for this thing. However, they come out and said it was a bear. I'll just let that sink in.
That's interesting.
But the report here says neither man nor bear was ever found.
Popular theory.
So, yeah. In 1978, paranormal researcher Joseph M. DeAndre claims to have observed another such creature as it slowly walked into the brush of the Alex's Swamp about 200 yards from his location. He chronicled the sighting in a 1997 book, Passing Strange, True Tales of New England, Hauntings and Horrors. And also, I thought this was kind of interesting because this is one of the movies that actually scared the shit out of me when I was younger. The Hitchhiker.
Oh, yeah.
Route 44. That's actually part in this, actually, Bridgewater Triangle.
Yeah,
that thing scared. Now, thankfully, the actual story isn't true to the movie at all.
Right.
It's a hitchhiker that appears, you go to pick it up, disappears. Thankfully, not like the movie whatsoever. But yeah, that one is on actually Route 44. A ghostly phantom appears in your swamp near Route 138. And from Freetown, a ghostly trucker is rumored to speed along the winding copycat road. Wow, you got mass. Fix your names.
Yeah.
Blaring his horn and threatening passing motorists. So yeah, there's, you know, another hell truck. So basically, this whole triangle of this park, of Bridgewater Triangle, is got some interesting things going on. I looked up, there's no military bases around. There's never one there to begin with, so that takes out conspiracy theories of government.
Military didn't do it?
Yes, the military did not do this, or government didn't do this. Like I said, there's no evidence of it. But again, if they do something like that, normally there's evidence of them being in the area. Yeah. There is none. It's just a really spooky area, and upon me looking it up, a lot of Indians, or Native American, I'm sorry. A lot of Native Americans have been around that spot.
They're, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of Native Americans.
And that first rock that I mentioned also goes by another name. It's called Suicide Rock. A lot of people have taken
opting out rock.
Yeah, I call it suicide. I'm a Gen Xer, baby. Don't care.
Love it.
Don't care. A lot of people have taken their own lives at that rock.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I'm not saying the place is causing that, but that seems to be a common spot for that to happen.
A theme.
Yes, whether or not it makes them feel comfortable enough to feel...
Yeah.
...to do that, but yes. Avoid... I wouldn't say avoid it totally, but be precautionary when going there.
Right.
And that's just not... I avoided... It really sucks because the biggest thing on this article was about the swamp. I couldn't talk about it because it's your story.
No, you know what? This is what I'll say. Go ahead and talk about it.
I can't.
No.
I can't.
So, to be fair, one thing that I want the listener group to realize is that there are certain times where I think Joe and I and Teresa have sat back and we thought, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't tell each other what we're doing, and then like see like cross reference to a certain extent.
Right.
I got my stories pulled up. So
all right.
So if you want to talk about the swamp a little bit?
All right. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of it. All right. So this swamp is a 5,000 plus acre area, lies within the western section of Bridgewater Triangle, and is the hub of many paranormal reports. Also the site of an 8,000-year-old Native American burial ground, when archaeologists opened up the graves of the grassy land, a red, pretty sure that says orc, but I think that's a typo, within the tombs bubbled and then mysteriously disappeared. Photographs taken of the excavation would not and could not be developed.
Interesting.
Which is kind of odd.
What year was that?
Does not say, actually. Again, Cliff Notes.
Okay.
The swamp remains shrouded in superstition called the place where spirits dwell, by the Wampanoag tribe of Native American nation. The Wampanoag avoided the Hamhock Swamp, and area remains a place to be filled with foreboding. So
it is interesting to me
that's
that
the Cliff Notes
the natives
version.
Decided to steer clear.
And that's a telltale thing to me. If the natives decide to be like, yeah, I wouldn't go there, bad juju.
You probably not go there.
We just do the white people thing and say, hey, we're going.
Right.
I mean, to be fair, in an extent of what you were saying, though, are the natives saying to not go there because they don't think you should go there, or because they have their ancient burial mound there that they...
It's that they avoid. Actively avoid the area. Said nothing about, I know what you're going with, and said nothing about the burial grounds. Normally they respect those and just say, hey, that's our burial ground, please stay away from it.
Right.
This one said they actively avoid it.
Just don't do it.
So it's something that they just don't go there. Whether or not it's the burial grounds, the article never said. So maybe you have more in your research.
Maybe I do.
But yeah, that's my story for this week.
I
thought it was kind of interesting that I like stories that encompass everything.
Agreed.
Because that provokes thought and conversation. So, yeah, that's my story.
I of course chose a story that I wanted to do for this week's episode, but I also have sort of a secondary story that I wanted to talk about since we are in the state of Massachusetts. Obviously, the most famous thing that ever happened in Massachusetts state history. In the paranormal field anyway, is of course the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
So I wanted to discuss that very, very briefly, because
I totally thought she was going to say the Lizzie Borden house.
I thought she was going to say Boston Red Sox winning the World Series, but all right,
the Red Sox won the World Series, guys. I don't.
I mean, that broke a curse.
It did break a curse.
Lizzie Borden wrote a poem. It's fine.
Right. Well, she. I don't know that she wrote the poem, but it's about her for sure. No, but the reason is because my great-grandmother, which is my dad's grandmother, most beautiful, beautiful woman. This woman was 103 years old when she passed away. Her name was Grace. Obviously, her married name was not the same, but her maiden name was Proctor. And she is, in fact, a direct descendant of John Proctor, and Sarah Proctor, throughout the years, you know, obviously having children and things, whatever. Anyway, point to the story is, so the proctors, obviously, anyone who knows about the Crucible, anyone who knows about the witch trials in general know that John Proctor was the first and eventually only male to be actually accused of witchcraft. He was extremely like, no, that's, I'm not a witch, you guys are crazy, like, this is insane. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to hit on it a little bit because they are my family. Literally, my family, it is my lineage.
The Proctors?
The Proctors.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
My great-grandmother is a direct descendant of John Proctor.
Huh.
Her name was Grace Proctor.
Okay.
She came over here on a boat. She had military situation, et cetera, et cetera. She was in Sussex. My great-grandfather was in the war, and he was from Germany, and he actually happened to be in the Sussex, England region, where all of the Proctors were originally from before coming here.
Gotcha.
They had met and, you know, traveled here to the States, and obviously this was many, many, many years after the Proctor situation, so this was... She is a direct descendant.
Nice.
Which means I am also a direct descendant of John Proctor.
No, I giggled at that because he's probably like, no, I'm not a witch, I'm not a witchcraft, and you're like, look at this crystal.
Right, exactly. I'm like, look at this, I'm a ghost slayer, check out these crystals.
What?
Yeah.
I just find it very, very fitting that while we are in the state of Massachusetts, I wanted to just talk a little bit about the Proctor family and
cool.
how they got super persecuted
and
crazed out of the entire bullshit.
Right.
But yeah, it was a devastating thing what happened, and whether people were witches or not is irrelevant to the fact that there was mass hysteria and horrible, horrible atrocities.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Talk about paranoia at its finest.
Exactly. On this day, remember the witch trials and don't be fucking stupid. So, do you want to talk about your story next, Alex, or do you want me to do mine?
Go ahead, since you kind of already started. Like, I would rather just let you flow into
Let me
doing.
Continue to go.
Yep.
So, my story is actually about the S.K. Pierce Mansion in Gardner.
Oh, okay.
Sylvester Pierce was a wealthy businessman who achieved his fortune as the owner of the S.K. Pierce and Sons Furniture Company. Because of the success of his company, the furniture industry in the city of Gardner, Massachusetts, actually became known as Chair City. Furniture, obviously. In the late 1880s, Pierce decided that he was going to build a mansion befitting a man of his public stature. The mansion he created was a marvel for its time. Nearly 7,000 square foot, boasted 10 bedrooms, took 100 laboring men a year and a half to finish this house. Hand-carved moldings all the way throughout the home, painstaking detail was used in every inch, from the master bedroom all the way to the servants' quarters, and the guest list for this house was absolutely insane. This place hosted people like former President Calvin Coolidge, Minnesota Fats, Bette Davis, P.T. Barnum, Norman Rockwell, and it actually became a pretty well-known meeting place for the Freemasons as well.
Hmm.
So Pierce and his wife Susan and their son, they had big, big dreams of moving into this one-of-a-kind mansion. But just a couple of weeks after they moved in, Susan unfortunately caught some type of a bacterial illness, and just a couple of weeks after moving in, she passed away. After an entire year of mourning his wife, Pierce got remarried to a woman named Ellen. She was about 30 years younger than him.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
You go, buddy. They had two more children. So Pierce actually ended up passing away in the home in 1888 of just age. His health was failing as he started getting older. He started getting a little bit of dementia, and then eventually dementia, you know, kind of has a way of saying goodbye. So he left behind his wife, their two sons, and then his son from the previous marriage. So three boys and his wife. When Ellen passed away several years after that, the three sons were constantly bickering over ownership of the mansion. The Great Depression happened. The business got pretty screwed up with the Depression, obviously. People weren't out buying furniture. And eventually, the youngest son, Edward, took control of the mansion. They underwent some pretty hard times as the family fortune dwindled. And Edward turned the mansion into a boarding home where some pretty unsavory activity like drinking, gambling, and prostitution became the norm. There were tales of multiple murders. One was a prostitute who was strangled in the infamous Red Room on the second floor. Another was a boarder by the name of Aino. He was a Finnish immigrant who was staying at the home. In 1963, he was staying in the master bedroom, and catch this shit, he burned to death by spontaneous combustion. For real.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have our attention.
It says some believed that this was a spontaneous combustion because there was very, very little damage to the room surrounding the body. Yet, the man burned to death.
Hey, man, he's just trying to firebend.
I don't think that was it.
Shout out to Avatar. Right?
Another story has... there was a young boy who was on purpose drowned in the basement of the mansion. Over the subsequent years, guests...
So fire and water.
Fire
Got
and
it.
Water. They're airbending.
Bending.
It makes sense.
Nerds told me.
Damn right.
Over the subsequent years, guests of the mansion had suggested that it was rich with paranormal activity. The ghost of S.K. Pierce himself, his second wife, Susan Pierce, I'm sorry, that would have been first wife, Susan Pierce, Edward Pierce, as well as a nanny by the name of Maddie Cornwell, a gentleman named David, who they believe was the actual Red Room strangler, the one who actually took the life of the prostitute. The prostitute herself in the Red Room, the young boy from the basement, a younger girl who they believe was the granddaughter of Pierce, and then, of course, Eno, who was the man who spontaneously combusted, and there was some sort of a dark, unnamed entity in the basement that has been described as some of this mansion, just some of the mansion's ghostly residents. Yeah, I can talk. The problem is I'm not wearing my glasses, so I'm having trouble reading my shit here.
We're old people. I was struggling the same way when I was reading mine. So.
Guests have experienced everything from voices, chanting, full-bodied apparitions, moving furniture, screens flying off the windows, slamming doors, the sound of footsteps on the stairs in the hallway, sudden temperature changes from hot to cold and back to normal, foul odors, shadow people, and an ominous lion's roar that shakes the entire house. Right? many believe that the lion roar is actually Mr. Pierce himself imposing his displeasure with the current state of the home and its residents. Others have felt the pressure of hands actually pushing them in hallways up and down stairs. One visitor felt a presence attempting to push her down the steps while another was almost forced out of a third floor window. Paranormal experts have said that the entities in the mansion are the most advanced, quote-unquote, that they have ever seen, as they are capable of harnessing electrical energy and converting that power into the ability to move large objects and impose their will physically on their current surroundings.
So intelligent.
Okay. Yeah, and apparently kind of strong. Previous homeowners have taken great strides in uncovering the secrets of this home. Many, many well-known paranormal groups have been there. My Ghost Story, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, they've all been there. The stories of this home have also been captured in books, such as Haunted Massachusetts and Bones in the Basement, Surviving the S.K. Pierce Haunted Victorian. There was another one. The house has been cited as the number two most haunted house in Massachusetts and the nine most haunted house in the U.S.
So it's up there.
Yeah, it's a good one. In the year 2015, Dark Carnival acquired the property, fully revitalized it, and turned it into a 30 to 35 person trained actor haunted house encounter for the holidays.
Oh, nice.
When it is not Halloween, however, you can still take a tour of the mansion. Just the mansion itself. You don't have to go through the haunted house.
That's
portion.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that both I appreciate that, and it makes me sad at the same time.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a big fan of converting quote unquote haunted houses into carnival style haunted houses, but okay.
Got to make a buck somewhere.
Exactly.
I both appreciate it, and it makes me sad. Right.
It is, however, if you go to SK Haunted Victorian Mansion, all one word, .com, you can read all of the things that I just spoke about. Credit to them for the story itself. And then, of course, you can buy tickets for the haunted attraction there as well.
Nice. Say how much the tickets are?
It doesn't. I just tried to click the get tickets thing, but I think because we're not
out of season.
Yeah, I think because we're out of season, it's not.
I would say normal haunted house runs you about $20.
So. This says SK Pierce Haunted Victorian Mansion Tour. Let's see here.
$350.
Right. This looks like a 30-minute tour. And price is not listed that I'm seeing. Actually, hang on, maybe. $27 a person.
All right.
For a 30-minute tour.
So probably $25 to $30 for the haunted house, quote unquote.
The haunted house. Yeah. I'm trying to.
Somewhere along them lines.
Yeah, this doesn't actually say. This one says if you want to purchase a gift card, phone them directly. But it doesn't have an actual price for the haunted house.
Right.
So, yeah.
Fair enough.
Ghosts and normal death and not so normal death and craziness and Mr. Pierce himself making lion roaring noises to let the world know that he's pissed off.
Right.
This house pretty much has it all.
Yeah, that's weird. I've never heard of a ghost roaring like a lion before.
Right? And it's an absolutely beautiful house as well. I'll go ahead and post a picture of it up on the Facebook page. So, yeah.
If you can, we had a great Facebook outage today.
It's actually been working for me all day. I don't know what's going on.
Nah.
Even when you said that, I like logged right on.
It's probably before you were awake. It's fine.
No, when he said that, I logged right on.
I was just making a joke.
Yeah, people must have been losing their shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, Al, why don't you go ahead and tell us about...
Can you check what I just checked 5 minutes ago?
Right. Go ahead and tell us about the swamp.
The swamp. Alright, well, to piggyback off of Joe's story...
Hello.
It's right there in the name. Hockomock is an Algonquin word, meaning... the place where spirits dwell.
That sounds very familiar.
It does sound very familiar. So, confirmed.
Right.
Kind of-ish. local indigenous groups believed that the swamp to be magical. And that certainly freaked out the newly arrived Puritans.
Right.
They ended up calling it the Devil's Swamp or the Devil's Bowl.
Right.
Go figure. Puritans. Natives, whatever. The area is the site of an old burial ground, probably that 8,000-year-old one you were talking about.
Right.
So naturally, vengeful spirits could bubble up from the netherworld at any moment.
Well, that makes sense.
The next mildly small portion that I would like to talk about, that I hope to some extent that our Dungeons & Dragons DM John is paying attention to, is hey, as follows. And then there are the Puckwudgies. The Puckwudgies are a prominent creature in the Wampanoag folklore. The name translates to little wild man of the wood that vanishes.
Yep.
Vanishes.
Yep.
Puckwudgies can make fire, cast magic spells, and disappear as they like. Other hobbies include throwing people off cliffs, attacking them with spears, and blinding their victims with pocket sand.
With what?
Pocket sand.
Oh, I thought you said pocket change. I was like, how? Okay.
So if you are planning on taking a leisurely stroll to the Hakamat Swamp at any time, be sure to stay alert, lest the Puckwudgies come out to claim their next victim.
Or they'll throw you off a cliff or throw sand in your face.
I'm sorry, Puckwudgies.
And we're on the same wavelength.
Or attacking them with spears.
Yeah.
Whatever.
No, we're on the same wavelength, because I saw that earlier. I'm like, that sounds like a really fun story, like Puckwudgies. And I was this close to doing it.
That's so funny.
So that said, the the historical value of the Hockomock Swamp being in the triangle is that it was originally a battlefield during the King Philip's War between 1675 and 1676. The King Philip's War was the bloodiest battle in U.S. or British history per capita.
Yeah.
Meaning the greatest population percentage died. 75 to 80% of natives were wiped out, and 25% of the colonists were wiped out.
Damn.
This is like screw everybody.
Right. To be fair, it's basically just a screw everywhere.
Which I'm sorry, but that fight had to be. I don't mean to cut you off, but that fight had to be hilarious. Like if they're killing over one side, the other side's probably like, "Yeah, get them!" And then all of a sudden they change back and they're like, "What?" My bad, Alex. Go ahead.
No, you're all good. So that said, there have been asylums in the area, prisons in the area, cult murders in the area, all kinds of human activity, UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, strange serpents, Puckwudgies, will-o-wisps, and glowing balls of light.
Yeah.
So over the years, basically every quote-unquote, we call them paranormal.
Yeah.
So here's one thing that I want to touch on, Facebook-wise. Paranormal investigations are that paranormal, anything above the norm. You're either a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator. Those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So fae, Puckwudgies, UFOs, Bigfoot, all fall into the paranormal category.
I've said that for years. Like, it's all the same thing to me.
Yeah.
I say that in the nicest way because I feel like a lot of people start watching ghost hunting shows on TV and they forget what true definitions are.
Right. Right. That's why I that's why I appreciated Mountain Monsters. It was all the same thing to them.
Yeah. They did a little bit of everything.
You're welcome for that, Alex.
Also, white trash TV.
Oh, God. Sorry. Yes. Oh,
we all know none of it was real, all right? It just is what it is.
Like
it's white trash TV.
Real. It was phenomenal.
But it's amazing, and I watched it every week. I don't care.
Yeah.
That said, there was once an article. It said, so we left the Haunted Woods home and headed to Central Square to see what Bridgewater locals think. They found Bigfoot's body stretched out on the bank. He was dead.
Wait, what?
No, he's just sunbathing.
It was a woman who, in the newspaper at the time, only identified herself as one woman who had identified herself as character on the common. So, like, she just lived on the main town square. She's like, yeah, we found Bigfoot body dead on the...
Oh, so like that crazy lady in the news is like, yeah, the mailman seen my boobs.
Right?
That kind of chick. All right.
Another local person, resident Mitchell Callahan, said, it's like our own Bermuda Triangle. It's cool. I'm pretty sure I live in it. And if I saw a puckwudgie, I'd try to pet it and make friends with it.
I mean,
that is the most honest answer I've ever heard in my entire life.
Fair. You know what? To be fair, Joe and I would probably do the same thing up until we got thrown off a cliff and speared and thrown.
I'd still be trying to pet it as it threw me off the cliff. Like, just let me love you!
But the moral of the story is, it's another one of those areas. It's like, you know, think of it like the devil's stomping ground in New Jersey.
Right.
You know, the Bermuda Triangle, the Alaska Triangle, like all these places where you find the central. And the thing is, so being 30 miles south of Boston, this is not like out in like the boondocks where we're just trying to make our shit to have fun, right?
Yeah.
It's like, huh.
No, it's actually a. Yeah.
Like, there's some weird shit going on here, right?
I mean, to be fair, it's in that area where there's like weird swamps and the land is kind of swampy like. So it has a lot of weird stuff in it. So
I think, to be fair, I think that any land area that naturally tries to keep people out gets that weird reputation, right? Like, well, there's the Mothman.
Right, what's going on over there? So I was inspired by the fact that that man was very honest and said that he would pet a puckwudgie.
You looked up what it would look like.
So I found a picture of a puckwudgie.
Should be our banner on our Facebook page.
And I'm going to be honest. This
petters of puckwudgies.
This is the cutest, most adorable, fluffy little monstrosity that I've ever seen in my life.
Is it like Critters from the movie in the 1980s?
Oh, it's better. Let me hang on. I got.
I have mine right in front of me.
Oh, here. It's right here. It's right here. Look at this little dude. Look at this. Forgive the sliding of my monitor here. Aww. You can't tell me he's not fucking
Joe wants
cute.
To pet it. See? We're doomed.
I want to lift
and speared.
Look at him. Look at him. Look at that little guy.
I mean, it's like the tiniest Bigfoot you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, dude, I want it as a pet.
I mean, look at those ears. He's got a little bat ears.
I mean, that feels to me very much like a druid familiar in D&D.
I could put a little sweater on him and, you know.
Joe's got a character idea. We're good.
I mean, if that is what puckwudgies look like, I want one.
Yeah, can I make a new race? It's the puckwudgie.
Yep.
The puckwudgie.
We could be brothers. Call it the Wedgie Twins.
The Wedgie Twins?
That fair. It's amazing, hilarious, and I mean, to be, don't get me wrong, it's serious in the extent of there's a lot of reports going on in that area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't feel like it's far enough away from civilization that it merits, like, hey, we're just weird out in the sticks people that are just making up stories.
You're not going to hear a banjo playing out there.
Right.
Like
right.
Let's get a better one.
How cute. I'm going to tell you what. This is just cute.
We're posting it on the page. It's fine. Let's not drag it out further.
Yeah. Oh, it's already going to drag out.
So that said, we've got puckwudgies. We've got U.S. UFO sightings. We've got Bigfoot
sightings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because one of the reports I read from it was like huge snakes.
And to be fair, ironically, that's also all kind of stuff that we have in Ohio, too.
Right.
The Peninsula Python, have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
I don't believe in it, though.
We don't have puckwudgies, though.
Well, also, what I'll say is this, all right? So, I was listening to a podcast earlier. I'm a snake enthusiast. I keep snakes. They were talking about how somebody did a scientific study and it was a concern in Maryland that nobody should be allowed to keep Burmese pythons because they could inhabit the area after global warming.
Okie dokie.
Alright, let me tell you that first off, any place that drops below 50 degrees for an extended period of time, and by that I literally only mean a month, I don't mean like months.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Your Burmese python is not going to live through that. I don't know what kind of scientist you think you are that you're writing a scientific paper saying that, like...
Have you been to Massachusetts?
Right. I don't know what kind of scientist you are writing a scientific paper that's saying this could happen if global warming happens. Right? Yeah. No. They're going to die. If that should happen and the Earth should warm to a state where that's a concern... chances are humans don't live here anymore.
Right.
Yeah, we're already gone. It's over.
And oh well. we'll create another for conspiracy theories.
Right. We're gonna sidetrack back off of that. Right. So yeah, swamps, a weird paranormal triangle.
Puckwudgies.
Mm-hmm.
Cutie patooties.
Adorable little puckwudgies.
No, it's definitely a weird area. I'll put it that way.
Well, I mean, so, yeah, technically, like, the Boston, the Massachusetts area, that's, like, one of the original 13 colonies, right? So, when I go back and I talk about things like, for instance, King Philip's War. And, you know, most people, to be fair, nowadays probably sit back and they're like, well, nothing happened before 1776. Well, no, like, Columbus discovered America in 1492. Right? There was like a whole 200-ass years there.
Right.
Like, where you're just skipping because, to be fair, even in our day, the history books skip from this to this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. It's if you want to look at that in a logical way, look at how, pardon the expression, the Gen Xers are today compared to the younger generation. We just didn't write stuff down because we were busy doing something else. So they may have not even bothered to keep record because they're like, yeah, it could have been commonplace for that to happen back then to where they just didn't even think of writing
down.
Yeah,
they just didn't even...
Right. And to be fair, what I'm saying is I'm not even blaming that on, like, a millennial generation type
thing. Oh, I'll just use that as an instance.
Because being a Gen Xer, right, what I can tell you is between 1492 and 1776, basically nothing was in the history book, right? They skipped that 200 years.
Yeah.
All right.
They're like... Columbus discovered America, Revolutionary War. There's probably 200 years between there, you know, whatever.
So we have to remember, though, that these days, even Google these days will tell you, in 1492, Columbus didn't do jack shit, because he didn't discover America. As a matter of fact, he discovered Hispaniola.
Oh my God. Hey, you shut your mouth.
Where's the paranormal in that?
Yeah, he discovered Hispaniola, which is actually part of South America.
Yeah.
He didn't step foot in what we now know as the United States until closer to the middle 1500s.
Yeah, technically the Pilgrims discovered America. But anyways,
before the Pilgrims.
You know what? Yes.
Anyways, like I was saying,
we could discuss this, but we're not done.
It could have been
on hiatus.
Yeah, it could have been just like it was commonplace for those things to happen. They kind of viewed it like the Native Americans did of Bigfoot. Yeah. Like it was like their distant cousin that they just didn't talk to. Just like
Bigfoot's our distant cousin we didn't talk to.
Right. So it's just like they just didn't, it was so common, they're used to seeing it, so it's just like, that's just George over there just doing his thing.
Ladies, not even gentlemen, viewers of the podcast, if you want to look it up, just make sure you look up all 1500 articles on when Columbus actually discovered America. We have no idea.
Oh, I was actually talking about the paranormal at the time, but all right. Well, look how Columbus too, go ahead.
I was just saying, even according to our history books, there was like a 200-year gap where not shit happened.
It's true.
I mean, Pocahontas.
Happened when?
Before the Revolutionary War.
But after Columbus, at some point, do you know what year?
Yeah, I'm joking, Alex.
Interesting.
No, because I wasn't alive back then.
Yeah, no, there was anybody else. It's fine. I'm not blaming you.
There was nothing to write. It was wooded area.
Woods. Lots of people just went hiking because there wasn't shit else to do.
I came. I saw a sequoia. I went home. Anyways. So, yeah, that... Like I said, the swamp area was very interesting. yielded a lot of different sort of, like, I wasn't expecting UFO right off the rip. Yeah, and I didn't know we'd be picking the same topic. That's kind of hilarious. That's a first.
I like
too.
It, though.
That's a first, too.
Well, to be fair, this is what, like, so other than, like, the first 5 weeks that when shit was so spread out that I don't think we were concerned about it.
Yeah.
Because, to be fair, it wasn't until, like, the last 10 to 15 states where we were like, hey, just in case we start tripping over the same stories, we should at least just let somebody know what stories we're doing, right?
Yeah. Right, right.
And then I think, to be fair, like, we as a group got to a certain point where we're like, no, maybe we shouldn't tell each other. Maybe we should just...
Well, we tell each other just a day of.
Right.
Yeah,
And today we didn't, because Joe and I went to Indigo Lake.
No, today we did, you just didn't answer.
Right.
Because I put in there, should have put more context, like, hey, Teresa, what are you doing? Or what are you guys doing? She put back what you guys are doing during the day.
Yeah, I literally was like, well, I'm sitting here.
To be fair, I was in the midst of eating Burger King and texting you back. So you directly set up the group chat.
Yeah.
So I was not paying attention to the group chat at all.
Yeah, no, that happens on a regular. I find that hilarious.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you're friends with people who've been married for 20 plus years. But yeah, no, Massachusetts yielded a lot of interesting stories to me. I dug digging it. And like I said, when I originally said the thing about diving into the states, the 13 colonies was my original aspect.
Agreed.
So yeah, and that's what I wanted. I wanted that old time stories of doing some looking up old paranormal and stuff like that.
I do agree with that.
And a 200 year gap.
So what I can say is it's fun to me, right? Because to an extent it feels like when you start talking a lot about, like, a lot of the 13 colonies and even, like, just the area immediately around that, that's when paranormal lines get blurred, right? There's, don't get me wrong, there's good stories, but also I feel like there's a lot of dealing with things like just the unknown in general.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, you know, back when people are originally settling the land, it's, look, it's like hardcore camping. Let's just call it what it is, right? Yeah. You might build a log cabin. It's a really good tent, okay?
Right.
It is what it is. Like, if you walk 500 yards that way, you're in the fucking woods. You're going to hear noises you never heard in Europe.
Yeah, no, really. You're going to hear the Pudgewuckies.
You're going to hear the Pudgewuckies.
I love them.
We're making Pudgewuckie twin characters in D&D.
Yes. But yeah, Massachusetts, you were fun.
I actually really enjoyed that. That was a good one. And of course, I always wanted to cover the whole stuff about the witch trials, because why not?
You know, you could have.
Well, I didn't really want to cover it in, like, a story format the way that I did the mansion, because, you know, everybody knows what the Salem Witch Trials were. Everybody's...
Yeah, but you had a personal connection to that.
I don't think that that makes...
It does.
In no way do I think that it makes it better for me to talk about a seriously popular story, just because it you know...
Senor Pudgewucky.
It does.
Pudgewucky. Like,
no, it does. It seriously does, because you give a personal... It's just like my story a couple... podcast ago when I talked about my dad and the trooper.
Yeah, but that's not, you know, Waverly Hills. It's not one of the big popular places that we've decided not to, you know, we decided
not doing
to
it
talk about less
on
popular.
That you're doing it on a family that you have that is involved in that.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what then. We'll do a different episode on something witch-like, and I'll cover the witch trials.
Well, what I'll tell you is that once we get away from, once we round out the states here and go into our next thing where we do a couple of episodes that are just topics like we started out doing, look, you being a proctor, me being a Baba Yaga enthusiast, you don't think witches are going to be one of our topics?
Oh, that explains that look.
Right.
But no, I mean, that's what I'll say is, to an extent, some of this is kind of therapy for us. Joe got to get out of that story. Like, maybe you just getting out the story of your heritage will make you feel better about some stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm good with it. I don't.
I was about to say, you want to talk about heritage? I got a litany of stuff I can talk about.
That's right. There we
are. Sun never shines on closed doors.
True, very true.
So, curiosity, what is it we're doing next week?
Well,
hopefully I don't get my butt slapped by a fae.
Well, that too.
Yep, we'll let that marinate. That's for roundtable.
Yeah. Next roundtable. We'll see what happens. So, our next state is a brother of one of the states that we have done prior, and not actually too long ago. Our next state will be South Carolina.
Woo!
We've done North Carolina.
South Carolina's probably got some good pirate stories we can talk about too, you know?
The Gamecocks.
You are super into the pirate thing.
It was fun. We had fun.
Essie is more Essie than Flynn is Flynn at this point, I feel
it's
like.
It's so true.
Listen, my roundtable will understand that. You listeners will not.
That's okay. We're talking about D&D characters, guys. Like I said, we're geeks. So, I heard this very interesting story. There was this gentleman that was telling this story, and I'm going to repeat it because I just think that it's funny. He says he was out camping one night, way out, deep dark woods, and he was just chilling by the campfire. All of a sudden, this Bigfoot walks into his campsite, just nonchalant, walks right in, opens up the cooler, grabs a beer, pops it open, starts to drink it, looks over at the guy, and he's like, "Don't bother, nobody's going to believe you." Yeah, I know, right?
When do we become dungeon daddies over here?
Is it fair for me to say that I'm more disappointed because I thought her story was going somewhere in the neighborhood of Puck Wedgies and Bigfoot?
There was no Puck Wedgies in there.
If Puck Wedgie reached into my cooler and grabbed a beer, I would be way more impressed.
I feel like that's pretty cool.
Is a Puck Wedgie an underage Bigfoot?
I mean, what
might
if they
be.
Are?
Like, listen, the picture she showed me, I'm thinking underage Bigfoot.
What if they are?
Or just kobolds.
True. Hey, we can't, you know.
A Puck Wedgie is a Bigfoot as a kobold is to a dragon.
Contribute to the delinquency of a Puck Wedgie.
I apologize for the rabbit hole we're going down with this.
We love you all.
It's been a long, strange week for all of us. We're just having fun right now.
Oh, for the love of God.
And to be fair, listen, there are plenty of places that we could have done in, like, the Massachusetts area, right? But a lot of those stories, house-wise, have all been soaked up. We've got the Lizzie Borden house. We've got, you know.
Well, also, it's the downfall of doing the original 13 colonies. Is so much has been reported there that it's kind of.
Everybody to be knows fair, I apologize, Massachusetts, but when we touch on the original 13 colonies, so much at the time when it was the original 13 colonies is unknown that I would rather touch on the unknown stuff than, like, a house.
But, you know, it would be
every other state has a house. You guys have a story.
What would be even cooler than that is if you lovely folks from the great state of Massachusetts who know of just normal everyday abodes or restaurants or bars or inns that have haunted stories, why don't you jump into your email and send me a story at nolightsparanormal@gmail.com so that I can talk about it on the show?
You mean South Carolina?
No.
We're talking about the ones we've done so far. South Carolina.
Oh, okay. All the other states, please do that also.
Yeah, I got you.
So here's one thing that we can notify that we were getting at, that what I also feel that she was getting at. We already had a few stories that were submitted. We already had our first story that was submitted when we asked for people to submit their stories. And we have a hoodie going out that we don't even have yet.
Yeah.
What I will say is that hoodie has been ordered and it will be shipped.
Now, what I'm going to say is that that's some shit. You're getting a really freaking awesome hoodie that I don't have and the group belongs to us.
Yeah, it's called giving back.
No, it's called...
being greedy?
Yeah. It's called you're getting the most awesome hoodie ever in my not so humble opinion. So please wear it proudly. I am so incredibly happy that you won it. Thank you so much for your story. They are being compiled, and I am going to tell it on the podcast. This is part of the spinoff I've been talking to you guys about. But no, for real, I'm not jealous. I'm actually super ecstatic. Thank you so much for listening. That was Trenton who got that.
Also, Trenton, send us a picture of you wearing the hoodie.
Please!
You can crop the face out so you're not...
But yeah, unless if you crop the face, that's okay. We don't have to do that.
Listen,
but yeah.
You can have your wife send in a back shot of you with just the back.
Just the logo.
That'd be awesome.
So, yes, Trent, I am so incredibly thankful for you and fans like you who sent in stories. Please keep them coming. We want to hear them all. And I am so incredibly glad that you won the first hoodie. Super cool. Super cool.
If you guys want to hear more about Puck Wedgies, just let us know. We'll talk about Puck Wedgies.
Oh, hell yeah.
Or regular Wedgies. I don't know.
We can create a 3D model of that.
Fuck yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for that. I saw that look.
Oh my god. What if we had somebody make a 3D model of a Puck Wedgie that was in an Alleged Paranormal hoodie and we just sold those?
That's crazy.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. We're going to patent that shit.
Either way, we love you, South Carolina. We will see you next week.
Yes, we will.
NoLightsParanormal@facebook.com. NoLightsParanormal@gmail.com. NoLightsGhostsOnX. Please send us all your stories and all your love. Thank you guys so much for everything you do. And promise we will get the second roundtable loaded ASAP.
And don't fuck with the Baba Yaga.
No, you don't get to say that this week.
Oh, yeah.
Don't fuck with the Fae.
No, I don't get to say that either.
But I can.
Have a good night, guys.